Welcome everybody back to the Cadet Conversations and Coffee Podcast. It's been really cool to see that we've had a little bit of a following from our first episode with Cody Moses. As a reminder, we're sitting down and interviewing different teachers and staff members at Iowa Falls Alden High School just to talk with them a little bit more about who they are, where they're from, and why they love teaching. This week on the podcast, I have Jess Nistel, high school English teacher. I sat down with Jess and we talked a little bit about her lifelong love for reading and her high school career, as well as, you know, why it is she got into teaching. Then she gives her definitive Mount Rushmore of Harry Potter book characters. I know Jess is a big Harry Potter fan and so am I. So we had a lot of fun talking about the different characters, that appear in those books. And I hope you love the episode. And if you do, check us out, subscribe, follow wherever you listen to podcasts, and tell someone to listen to us. Thanks. So I'm here with Jess Nistel, English teacher at the high school. How you doing, Jess?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks for being on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about what else you're involved with at the high school. I know you're in a couple different activities as well.
Yeah. Right now, I'm taking a break from coaching academic decathlon, but I'm still in charge of journalism with our scheduling this year. That's been fluctuating of what we can actually do. But then I also help I direct the spring play this year, maybe virtual. There's just so many things, but normally I help with, I coach academic decathlon, direct spring play, and then with broadcast journalism too.
Yeah. That's a lot of different events for people who don't know. There's a lot that goes into that. Yeah. I did the spring plays when I was growing up, and I think I took for granted sometimes how much the director was working on that production, because it's there's a lot stressful that goes into it.
Yeah, there's been some high emotions, but then we all get together and they put on a great show. So
yeah, when that weekend's done, though, there's a collective exhale from everybody.
Yes.
Well, that's awesome. Well, tell me about your family and where you grew up.
I'm from Manchester, Iowa, so about an hour and a half east, right down on Highway 20. Graduated from West Delaware in 2002. My parents still live in the same house I was born in. I've got two younger brothers, Jeff and Mark. So I am the classic oldest sibling type. So pretty type A, you do what I tell you. Mm-hmm. And then plus my parents were also kind of strict, because my dad was military police, mm-hmm, and a police officer. So we did what we were told. So I didn't get into a lot of trouble in high school. I was a good kid. I made up for in college, but in high school, I was a good kid. I was in band, marching band, loved those. They're great opportunities for me. Speech really helped me get over nerves of being in front of people, being comfortable in front of other people. That was a great activity, and I loved that. And then I was also in the newspaper and yearbook committees. So, kind of continuing my interests from high school into teaching. After that, I went to Wartburg, got my degree in public communications, worked at a newspaper for a while. I realized that wasn't quite for me, went back to UNI, got my degree in English education, and then I started teaching in Northwest Iowa, and then I came here.
Awesome. Where at Northwest Iowa?
I was at Remsen Union.
Okay.
It's a little school. They're now consolidated with Marcus Meriden Cleghorn. So it's at MMCRU. It's a quite mouthful, but I liked it. I liked teaching there. The class sizes were very small, so I had most kids all 4 years. Mm-hmm. So you really got to know them. Did a lot of the same stuff that I do here. It's just Iowa Falls is a lot closer to home. So
yeah, and that's cool how your path, you were in the journalism field, which I know is the class you teach. So you have lots of knowledge there and obviously a passion for it. Yeah. But then you're able to, go back and get that teaching degree, and now you're able to share that passion with students. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. And I tell my students to always trust your gut, because as my sophomore year, I think I was at Wartburg, I like writing, but this quite isn't for me. And I talked to my advisor and I wanted to take some education courses. And she told me that she told me I was too good of a writer to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, well, she knows best. This is her job. So I stuck it out. And then I was like, man, if I had just listened to myself, mm-hmm, I could have saved myself a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of stress, and just done what I wanted from the beginning. So I always tell kids, I'm like, yeah, you have you will have advisors, but you should always trust your gut.
Yeah. And even though like I was like you, or I changed my major a couple times, but even though you take kind of a weird path to get to where you want to be, I always tell kids it's worth it to do it, yeah. You know, because if you were to just say, nope, I committed to journalism, you know, but then if you didn't have as much fun doing that, you know, that could be a waste of time too. So even though it's like derailing the path, like I had to go to school an extra year, and while that wasn't fun and it was a little bit more expensive, I feel like it was the right decision. And so it's cool that you were able to find that.
Yeah. Ultimately, path. I'm doing what I want to do, mm-hmm. what I feel I can also then help other people best as well.
For sure. Yeah. So you hit on this a little bit. You mentioned some of the activities you were involved in. Mm-hmm. What did you like and dislike about school as a student?
I mean, honestly, there was not a lot I disliked. I generally enjoyed, you know, even classes that I didn't really care for, you know, as long as I had some friends in there, it was fine. You know, I didn't like PE, but it was fun once we got going, you know. So I really liked school in general. I liked my teachers. I got along well with them. You know, I found places for me, you know, within the school. So, I mean, there was not a lot I disliked. Now, my brothers, especially my youngest brother, had very different experiences. So, I mean, that helps me to kind of see kids who don't like school, because it's hard for me to, like, you don't like school.
Right.
But like my brother, Mark, very smart, very capable kid. It's just school wasn't his thing. Mm-hmm. So he often just didn't go. And so, I mean, we kind of have a lot of experiences with school in my family, very different ones. But in general, I mean, it was I loved being at school. You know, yeah. It was always a good place for me to be.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah. You know, teachers, I think, that's part of why they get into teaching, is because they had a good experience and they want other students to have that. But you bring a great perspective when you're talking about your brother, you know, and some other students who you maybe know. It helps you understand how to work with some of those students a little bit. Because I certainly had friends like that too. You know, my parents were both teachers, so school was kind of what we did. But I had friends who it was not a great place for, and that can make it challenging for sure. But it's awesome that you had a great experience. You said you were involved in, you know, a couple different activities. What was your favorite activity, you know, outside of the classroom? What was your favorite activity that you were involved with in high school?
Probably marching band. I mean, we did a lot of outside time because I was in drumline. And so we had a lot of practices on our own. We became a really tight clique. We performed well together. You know, we didn't care that if we were called band nerds or things like that. We just liked what we did, and we enjoyed it. And our band director, he reminds me a lot, kind of like Mr. Schmidt. Like, he puts up with a lot, you know, and the kids just really gravitate to him. So I'd say probably marching band. I enjoyed concert band, but I was always sad when marching band was over. We just had a great time at contests, practice. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like your experience is a lot like some of our students here. We have an excellent marching band, and I'm sure that's cool for you to see as a former band member, to see kids take a lot of pride in that.
Yeah, and I'm excited too, you know, that they're talking, I mean, obviously not this year, but, you know, going to some competitions in the future. I think that'll be really good for them.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. The band will always play at our basketball games, or at least I ask them to. I would rather have them play than a mixed playlist or something. And, you know, I love going down to the band room every season right before the year and saying, we need you guys, you know, because our band is awesome. You know, you go to some schools, and I'm not trying to disrespect other schools, but it's just that our band has this energy, and it's just cool to hear them play. And so any opportunity we can get from them is great. So let's shift away from school a little bit. You know, because teachers, yes, we do like school. We think about school, but we also are people too. You know, what do you like to do with your free time?
Well, really, that's kind of like asking, what do I do during the summer? Because once school starts, like, you know, like, there's not a lot of free time.
Sure.
But I mean, obviously reading, you know, I always challenge myself to try and read, you know, a certain number of books a year. And then I try to, you know, if kids give me recommendations, I try to keep up on those.
Is that hard as an English teacher? Because some of their recommendations, you're like, I already read that, or I already know that's not going to be my thing. But you want them to have a love for reading, so yeah. That's kind of cool.
There are some where I'm like, oh yeah, I'll write that down. Like I just don't. But there have been some too where they'll tell me and I'll read it. I'm like, this was amazing. Yeah. You know. So I mean, it's like when anybody recommends a book. But I mean, I like that. My family and I were huge Cubs fans. So we try to get to, you know, games or just keeping up with that. This past, you know, because of the pandemic, I started hiking, you know, awesome. Not anything extremely strenuous. No, I won't be hiking the Appalachian Trail or anything like that, but I really like going out to Pine Lake. There's Backbone State Park over by my hometown. And so that's been really nice too. So I've been trying to do that on the weekends. I have two cats, Beezus and Ramona. So they also keep me busy. They like to go outside and stuff. But yeah, just, I don't know, hanging out with, like stuff I did in high school, like hanging out with friends.
Sure.
Things like that. Yeah.
Now, good. Two things. One, I didn't ask you this question beforehand, but I'm going to throw it at you. So I know you are, obviously being an English teacher, we read a lot, but you are truly a lifelong reader. You're someone who loves to read. What would be like three of your favorite novels you've ever read? I know that's such a tough question to just throw at you, but I love to read as well.
I'm so stressed. Yeah. that's like, I don't know. That's like asking like, what's my favorite book to read when I'm sad? You know, what's my favorite book when I want to be nostalgic?
Sure.
But I won't say they're my favorite, but like three books I really like. We'll put it that way. Three books I really like are 1984. I've got one right here on my desk. Just because I still remember the feeling of reading this the first time and just thinking like, you know, that meme where like the head's just so much knowledge.
Yeah.
It just opened my mind so much. And then it made me want to be more aware of what was going on in the world. And I read that in college, I think, for the first time. So 1984, plus I get to share it too with my kids in Dystopian Lit. When they read it, like they have feelings and I love watching that. Probably two, and this is totally non-academic. I don't know why, but I love the book, The Big Over Easy by Jasper Ford. It's a fantasy fairy tale mystery crime.
Cool.
It's very weird. He also writes the Tuesday Next series, which is infinitely more popular. But I like The Big Over Easy. I reread it at least once a year. And I just am so sad he needs to continue that series.
That's how I feel. I'm a big fan of A Song of Ice and Fire, the books that Game of Thrones is based on. And like, we've all been waiting for George R. R. Martin to write The Winds of Winter for like years.
I was going
like,
to say, it's been taking him a while.
Yeah. And we're just like, and he's getting up there in age. So it's like, is it going to get finished or, you know, but I also think too, there's a creative process that can't be rushed. But come on, man, it's been 10 years. Like, let's
exactly. Go. Yeah. Like there's only two books in that series by Jasper Ford. And the last one was written like 15 years ago and he started other series since.
What else are you doing in the pandemic?
It's like, get this done. probably one of my three other books that I really, really like. Oh my gosh. I'm like looking around my room at my shelves right now. I like pretty much any kind of reinterpretation of Pride and Prejudice. Mm-hmm. I like the original. I really like the original. But then also, too, there's a lot of modern adaptations, different viewpoints, different settings. I like those. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, awesome. That's great. And I think, that's a tough question. You know, what are three of your favorite books ever?
Know.
Because it's, you know, that to cap it with three makes it really tough. But I think what is cool about, you know, continuing to be a lifelong reader. And I try to tell this to students all the time, because we have a lot of students who the only reading they do is in English class. And, you know, I think if they can learn what their niche is or what the type of books that they like, they're always going to be able to find, you know, those books to escape to. And it might not even be fiction. It could be, you know, nonfiction books about becoming, you know, more positive. We read The Happiness Advantage for school. And I think if you can find those things, reading is always a better alternative than scrolling through your phone before you go to bed. You know, there's like science out there that's proven that. And I think if we can get kids to that point, that's really cool. So I'm glad you shared that. The second thing I wanted to bring up that's not on my questions I gave you beforehand is, so you mentioned your pets, your cats. Mm-hmm. I would love, I'm more of a dog person, but I would love to have a cat too.
Yeah.
What would be the one what convincing argument could I give to my wife to allow us to get a cat?
You don't have to take them for walks. You don't have to let them out in the middle of the night like a dog.
Yep.
They're pretty self-sufficient.
Yep.
You know, and that's what I mean, that's part of what I like. I like their aloofness. You have to work for their affections. I like their superiority complex that they have. Plus two, you know.
You're listing a lot of things that people say as criticism of cats.
I know. I like it. Like dogs, I don't know. It's like, you like everybody, you know. But with cats too, plus, like, they're kind of at my energy level. You know, if we want to go outside and run around, yes. But half the time, no. We're just going to lay on the couch. And that's fine.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I like the self-sufficiency, yeah. I guess, of cats.
I would rather have a cat than no pets. And so I'm trying to convince her. I always tell my students, I'm always like, hey, I said, you know, if you see me walking around with my wife, she's really tall. Just go up to her and say, hey, you should get a dog or you should get a cat. Just, and she gets frustrated at me when that happens. But
so does she not have any pets?
They didn't have any pets growing up. She likes dogs. You know, she's kind of against cats. But you know, I do get what she's talking about. You know, we're busy and like you said, dogs require a lot of you got to take them out. You got to do this. And, so that's why I've been trying to convince her on the cat. Just not quite there yet. So.
Take her down to, you know, Greenbelt and just let her look around. Yeah. She's bound to find something she likes.
Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
All right. So you know me and I know you, and I know that we are both very big Harry Potter fans,
yes.
Fans of the Harry Potter series. And I know that you've taught J-term classes on Harry Potter. You've brought discussion about Harry Potter into your classes. And we've had conversations about it.
Yep.
So, I have to ask you, what is your Mount Rushmore? So this is a category we do with every podcast, Mount Rushmore. So it's a you have to list four, and it doesn't have to be a ranking. It doesn't have to be one through four, but four of the all time best of some type of category. And I figured the category for you had to be, all time favorite or the Mount Rushmore of Harry Potter characters, and we are strictly talking novels. We're not talking the films. We're talking the novels. What's your Mount Rushmore and why?
Okay. Now this one I did give some thought to, and I'm still conflicted within myself, but I instantly scratched off Harry Potter from the list because I was like, that's a given. It's his story.
Yep.
So I was like, okay, thinking not Harry Potter. I mean, first, and I kind of thought too, characters, my big thing, I mean, I think would be showing growth, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. Harry Potter is classic coming of age tale. Where are we seeing a lot of those traits represented in characters? And I think definitely one of them on my Mount Rushmore would be Neville Longbottom. Mm-hmm. You know, he grows kind of like from a lackey. He doesn't really have a spine, but he starts trying to stand up to his friends. And then two, by the end, he's able to not only carry the DA, you know, in absence of Harry and Ron and stuff, but he is able to summon the sword of Gryffindor, you know, showing
the sign of a true Gryffindor.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think Neville has shown such an amazing coming of age arc. So I think I have to put him up there. You know, he's grown and matured and he's really learned to stand up for himself and for his beliefs.
He dealt with trauma that like obviously Harry has trauma, but you know, for him, part of it too is that you know he didn't know these things about himself. It was all after the fact.
Yeah.
Neville had to see, you know, going to visit his parents in St. Mungo's.
Yes.
Like he had to see the trauma, like proof of it.
Exactly.
Every year, you know, and that's tough.
So I mean, he went through a lot in his life too, you know, and you know he was always thought of as like kind of a joke, you know, at the beginning, especially by other classmates. I think he really proved himself. So I would definitely put Neville there.
Awesome.
I mean, obviously Hermione. I see a lot of myself in Hermione.
Can we just like appreciate Hermione? Because there's a lot of talk that like amongst the Harry Potter fandom community that are we sure that Harry's not just like a a jock who wouldn't have gotten far at all without Hermione. Like, is she basically the hero of the story?
He's like, Harry, I kind of think of like Harry Potter. He's just this lovable puppy, you know, and he just kind of guided through life by these mentors, you know.
Like, how lucky did he get being friends with Hermione?
Exactly.
Granger?
So, I mean, I think she truly was the brains behind the operation. But, you know, and then you've got the loyalty for Ron. But like Hermione, you know, obviously she doesn't come from a witch background. You know, she's technically a muggle, whatnot. And so she has to learn this whole new world. And I think she does so really well. I mean, she's a people pleaser, especially in the beginning. But like Neville, I think she really learns to stand up for herself, what she believes in. I mean, she stands by her friends no matter what. She's really loyal to them. So, I mean, I would definitely pick Hermione. I mean, you can't not have a Mount Rushmore of any kind of Harry Potter thing without Hermione on it.
I can't disagree.
Yeah.
I love, you know, obviously you love the main character, you love the protagonist, but I did a reread probably last summer and listened to this podcast in tandem with it. And there were just so many points that were brought up about, Are we sure that Harry wouldn't have just died in the first book without Hermione? He probably would have. And so the fact that he became friends with her is incredibly lucky for him and the entire wizarding world.
Yes.
So thank you, Hermione Granger. You are appreciated.
Yeah.
So who would your third one be?
Okay, now this might be a hot take, but I would say Draco Malfoy.
Ooh.
Because again, if we're talking about coming of age journey, if we're talking about you know, growing up, maturing, especially redemption, I think Draco has it. Now, I would have liked to see a little more sooner, but I mean, he realizes, hey, what I'm doing is wrong. He was put in, I mean, extremely precarious situations as a kid by his parents, and not taught any different, you know, but then he realized I don't have to believe necessarily what I'm taught.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I think is huge, huge, huge for Draco. And I have a hard time too separating him from his character in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I would put him on there because if we're looking at this idea of people can become better or can change who they are for a better world, I think he definitely deserves a spot.
Yeah. And I think like there's this idea of, you know, sins of the father, like, mm-hmm. like his dad committed terrible things.
Yeah.
And probably a lot of them out of fear from, you know, what would happen to him, but he still did. And he was, you know, a rotten person. And Draco, like you said, almost grows up thinking this is what I have to be. This is who I have to be. And in that sixth book, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, we get to see that more. Now I think the film does a good job of showing us his perspective more, because it's hard when you're in Harry Potter, you're behind his shoulder the whole time. But like that, his trauma is, you know, being forced by Lord Voldemort to try to kill Albus Dumbledore. And it's like, oh man, you're putting that on a kid. You're trying to make him a murderer. And you're right. Draco, he does redeem himself in a sense, and he's going through a lot too.
Yeah.
And while we can hate him in the moment, when we step back and look at it, there's a lot there to unpack.
And and it took a long time for me to come around. But then, you know, reading the story as a series, as a whole, then you can really see his development, his growth with that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean, they've all had trauma put on them by Voldemort. I think Harry, I mean, obviously Hermione later on, Neville definitely,
mm-hmm.
and then Malfoy too, by being a pawn of his parents and mm-hmm. stuff. Yeah. See, I go back and forth. I don't know who I would put on from, it would be like my, this would be like my Teddy Roosevelt one. Like, I gotta put a fourth one on, you know, I don't know. I guess, I don't know. Teddy Roosevelt, I'm like, yeah, there are better choices, but okay. I don't know if Snape had enough redeeming quality. I mean, he did redeem himself, but I don't know. I think I would probably put Dobby on there. That little elf just like overcame so much.
Oh yeah.
You know, and two, like,
and the books hit on that, and the movies mm-hmm. don't. Movies don't talk about that. The oppression of like house elves.
Yeah.
And there's a whole For people who only watch the movies, they don't know this, but there's a whole storyline in the fourth book that Hermione takes this, what does she call it?
Spew.
Yeah, spew. Yeah. And it's, I can't remember what it stands for, but it's all,
yeah,
it's about like basically civil rights for house elves. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you're right. Like people don't know what he's overcoming.
And like he even goes to war in Harry Potter when he's still under, you know, servitude to Malfoy's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's trying to help him. So, I mean, he does, you know, like Neville, he does a lot of things for others at great personal risk for himself.
Yep.
So, I mean, I think Dobby could probably be up there too. Like he's just so sad, like the whole thing. But yeah, he overcame a lot. So, I mean, if I had to choose probably between Snape and Dobby, I would pick Dobby.
Yep. Here live Dobby, a free elf. Yeah. Well, I can sit and talk with you about Harry Potter all day. especially, you know, like the things you're bringing up are truly things from the books. And the movies, I think, did a fine job, but the books are so much better. Yeah. And I know people say that all the time, but in this situation, it truly is.
Well, because, I mean, there's so much from the book, unless you want a movie that's 8 hours long. Yeah. You know, obviously, you have to cut some things. But, I mean, there's a lot of beloved series that I can't think of one where I've said that the movie was better. You know, taking it from book form to movie form. I don't know.
Do you think Harry Potter, the series, should be remade as a Netflix series?
I think that would be worse than like when they remade Ghostbusters with women, because there are men were like angry.
Yeah.
Like,
you think, you're saying the pushback would be worse.
I think the pushback would be worse.
I think it'd be a great idea.
I would welcome it. I don't know how much it would be well received though right now, especially with the comments from the author, J.K. Sure. Rowling, over her views on women and transgender people. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But
I guess I say it would be a good idea because, like you said, there's so much to explore that the movies couldn't. But then I also think if you're going to have this show that's on like Netflix or Amazon, whoever wants to pay the money to do it, you could explore some of those darker themes. That's true. Because this is a series that it may have started as a children's story. But man, at the fourth book, when it takes the turn,
it's dark.
It's very dark. And you could explore a lot of those things, I feel like, a little bit better than the films. And just include all those things, the storylines. And there's whole characters that are written out. And, you know, you could explore all that a little bit more. I think that would be cool.
That would be, you know, like maybe an episode from a different person's perspective.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, I just miss, because when I was still young enough, when the first... at least the first three books had come out and there were no movies yet. Yeah. So I could use my entire imagination to create this world. And then when the movie started coming out, that's then all I could picture.
Sure.
So, I mean, that was kind of a letdown. Like I enjoyed the movies, but then it kind of killed my own book world that I had created for this, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, the last question that we end with, and we always end with the same last question is, what is your why? Why do you teach?
Mine's pretty simple. You know, like I want to leave the world at least a little better than I found it. And for me, how I can affect the biggest change, I guess, is through teaching. At Wartburg, they have this idea of, and I know it's a quote from somewhere, but I can't remember where, but like where your passion and the world's needs meet, that's where you're supposed to be. And so for me, that is here in the classroom. I mean, obviously, yes, there are times when I get frustrated or angry about things, but a lot of times that has really nothing to do with the students or the teaching itself. It's all of the stuff that comes with it. So for me, it's just, I want to help the world. I want to help people. This is the best way for me to do that.
Yeah. Awesome. That's a great response. And I think about, you know, us as teachers, is there a job where, I mean, there are jobs probably, but I just don't think there's many jobs that you get to impact as many people, you know, in your day as you do as a teacher. Yeah. And I think that speaks to the position for sure.
And sometimes you don't even realize it. Like there are times when I'm like, are they even listening? You know, but then I hear back from them later, you know, or they're taking another class and they're like, wow, this thing that we did really helped me. Or, you know, now some kids are like, now I like reading, you know, or things like, that's huge.
Or what I
that's
told really you about, one of my former players,
yeah.
Brady Jansen told me that your class was really tough, but he's so happy he took it because now in college he's killing his papers.
Yeah. You know, so I mean, it's things like that where it might not be instant gratification, but then when you do find those things out, it's really important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks for coming on the podcast, Jess.
Yes. Thank you.
Keep doing your thing and we'll see you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. If you like what you hear, give us a follow on Spotify, Anchor, or wherever you listen to podcasts.